Okay, we are taping today is December 3rd, and this is the third installment of a series called Narratives of Sefer Bereishis that impact the halacha. So our question today in Parshas Toldos is going to be, can you sell a birthright? Is a bechorah something that can be sold? Can you sell things that cannot be held in your hand? I know I can sell a watermelon, I can sell a car, I can sell a plot of land, even though I can't hold it, right? So, can I sell something that's not
tangible?
It's not a tangible thing, but it's a concept. Can a bechorah be sold? And why is it that when Yitzchak heard that there was a misrepresentation of what had been the bracha that he had given to Yaakov, thinking that it was Esav, why didn't he just say the obvious? Oh, I take that back. I didn't know. I didn't think it was Yaakov, and I didn't mean for that to be given to you.
It's not relevant, even if it's not the
bechor. Yeah, if you give a bracha on a false pretense, wouldn't it be like any other contract you went into that it's false pretense?
So why didn't he nullify the bracha right there on the spot? Okay.
Is that what would be called intellectual property today?
So maybe perhaps we can say I own this insignia, but an insignia or an idea,
a computer program or an idea.
But those things are tangible. Those things are quite imagine tangible. All right. So, but the question is, if let's say you have two brothers, and they're about to inherit $3 million. One is a bechor; he's getting $2 million, and the other one is getting $1 million. Right. So on the face of it, it would appear that you can, the Bechor can say, listen, I always wanted to have your baseball card collection or your rock collection, right? If you give me your rock collection and your coin collection and your baseball card collection, I will let you inherit as if though you're the Bechor. Right? Yes, you can do that, right? Okay, so let's go back to our pasuk.
But Yosef Yaakov Nazir. You're just changing tangibles. No. You can't change the bechiros of the guy.
Okay, let's see. But Yosef Yaakov Nazir. Yaakov was cooking something. Right? Mm-hmm. It just says Vayozid Nozid. The word mezid comes from this, because when you do something bemezid, you're cooking up a plant.
Yeah, plant.
Okay. Vayozid Yaakov Nazir. And our sages tell us that he was making lentils.
Because Avram
had just passed away. Right? Now, based on the information that is available to us in Sefer Bereishis, when Avram died, Yaakov and Esav were 15. Okay, so we do an Arim, they're 15. Fine. So Zaidi just passed away, and Yaakov is cooking lentils, as is the custom. He came in from the field. It doesn't say he was hungry, but he was tired. I don't know if you've ever been like dead tired and dead hungry at the same time. Probably the best thing to do is to probably just go to sleep and you know,
that's when you get
wake up hungry, right? maybe your hunger will wake you up in the middle of the night and get a bite, and you need a midnight snack or something. But be that as it may, the text calls him tired. Who are you? All right, let's move on a little bit. Vemari Sabel Yaakov. And Esav sees that Yaakov is cooking something. And he says, Haliteni nom min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. Haliteni is a very unusual word. Lamed ayin tet is the word the Mishnah uses for holding open a camel's mouth and stuffing food down his mouth if he doesn't want to eat. Right? So in the English, it probably just means, let's see, it means... It just means
just
that
like he's going to eat like a pig.
Pour into me.
Pouring.
So it's a we're getting
I'm
a picture, our
down.
First picture of Esav.
Fork and a knife and a napkin, right. And be proper. I'm just going to scarf it down.
And this is the first time brothers ever converse, by the way, in the Torah. This pasuk right here. Just by Yomer Kain, he never does say what he says. Yitzchak and Yishmael don't talk. Avram doesn't talk to his... Not in the text. Avram talks to Lot, and he calls him my brother, but they're not really brothers. But okay, So, and then Yaakov talks again, of course, in this week's Parsha Teisa.
That doesn't bode well for sibling conversation.
Yeah. All right. But this is the first discussion. Haliteni no min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. Right? Remember, B'derech Tzachos, later on in the Parsha, Rashi says that the reason why Yitzchak thought he was in the presence of Yaakov and not Esav is because he said, Kumna Shiva. Please get up and eat my food. And Yitzchak's antenna goes, what? This can't be Esav. Esav doesn't use the word no. That's what Rashi writes. He says also, he says, God hastened my footsteps to bring you the food. Which, so he says that he used the word no, and he used the name of Hashem. So according to Rashi, Yitzchak knew very well which one was the more spiritual one. And the more courteous one. Polite one. Right? Okay, so why does Rashi say Esav never uses the word not? He uses it right here.
He doesn't use it with Hashem.
Right, so he doesn't use it together with Hashem, but still, Rashi seems to imply...
There are different meanings to the word not.
Okay, so when Targum Onkelos wants not to mean now, not usually means now, he says that Targum is ke'an. Ke'an. It means now in Aramaic. When Targum wants na to mean please, the Targum Onkelos is bivau. Bivau. That means please in Aramaic. It's like the Vagasha. Right? So, bitte in German. Listen to this pasuk, because it's a good pasuk that has the word na twice in it, where the Targum says one bivau, one na is kel na refon na la. Moshe was praying for Miriam in Parshas Baloscha. It says, Kael na refon na la. Translate that into English.
God, please heal her now.
Heal her now.
Right. It doesn't mean God, please heal her, please. It doesn't mean God, now heal her now. It means God, please heal her now. And the Targum indicates that by writing Bevau first and then Ke'am the second time. So it's fair enough. Just, and incidentally, most of the time, na in Tanakh means Ke'am, according to Targum. Mm-hmm. However, na can mean a third thing, as you started to make. Remember, this
yeah.
a third thing in the Torah that the word na can mean. It's very rare, but it's
raw.
Yeah, it's even more than rare. It's raw.
Raw.
The Torah says, "Do not eat the Korban Pesach na."
Raw, which means raw.
Which means raw. But the word for raw and the word for now is probably etymologically connected because
now before it's.
Right.
Before it's finished.
I want it now before it's cooked.
Yeah.
And just if you add this, I don't know how lentils were then, and I know there are different types of lentils.
But the more you cook them, they turn brown.
Cook, they turn
but it says
brown.
That it's red.
They start That's off true. Reddish, and they turn brown the more you cook them. So the reason why he loved the color red, because he faces it every day in the field, and it's his color. He's named by this color. It's his color. They named him, Kuloka Deresera, Shon Admoni. Right, so he was. He likes the color. Fine. So when he sees Yaakov cooking this, you know, he says, "I gotta have some of that. I'm starved." And he was tired. It says, "But okay, I have to have this right now." So Yaakov says, "Hold on a second. Do you know that Zadie just passed away, and that's what I'm cooking?" He goes, "You know, Yosef doesn't have time for those things. I want halitani. Pour it down my. It's raw. I just started cooking it." And he says, "I live for the moment." After all, when is a bechora cashed in? When does a bechora get cashed in?
When he died.
When the parent dies. So, Jessica, we're on page 126 in the Chumash. First, get a bagel. So when a parent dies, so Esav is 15, right? And Daddy is 75. Daddy is going to live, maybe Esav knows, because Zadie just died at the age of 175. Daddy is 75. Avram was 100 when he was born. In other words, what do I... I'm going to hold out for something for 100 years from now? I don't live for 100 years from now. I don't even live for tomorrow. I live for today. Right? Remember, there's a 60s song. Remember, live for today, I think it's called. I forget what it is. Who sings it? Grassroots, maybe. Okay, I don't know. If someone's listening, call me. But that was the 60s. You know, Esav is a man of the 60s. He's, right? He lives for the moment. I see death. My hunting occupation, I don't even expect to outlive daddy. So what does a bechor mean to someone like me? Mm-hmm. Right? Now I'm explaining according to the Rashbam. Rashbam says that Yaakov saw an opening for what this competition, but they're only a minute or two apart. Okay. And Yaakov says, wait a second, because this is ingrained in them. There's someone holding on to his heel, saying, you know, get back here, I'm supposed to come out first. Right? So he is, this, the competition is definitely, it's pervasive. When Rivka is going to tell him to get the bracha that's really yours, Yaakov doesn't say, "Mommy, it's the wrong thing to do," or "Should I really be cheating
father?" He's worried he'll get punished.
Why am I going to get caught? Right now, she when she hears that you know he's worried about being cursed for it. Mm-hmm. Now the curse could be that daddy will take away the bechor from me and not even give me a chelek pashut, meaning he'll disinherit me altogether. Right, in which case, I think this is the simplest pshat. She says, "Olai kilolos chobni."
I'll make sure that doesn't happen.
Either I'll make sure that doesn't happen, or if Daddy disinherits you, I have a fortune. I'll take. I own some things too. And Mike Suva says this, or whatever. However, it is you want to explain it, I will make sure that you are financially secure. Should that happen?
That's a simple
interpretation. Well, how about Rashbam asks, what if you don't want to do something and because you're afraid of being cursed? And say, okay, I'll do it because mommy will be cursed instead.
That's worse. Yeah.
So Rashbam answers. Rashbam asks this question and he answers that what it means is that Rivka told him at that point, I know that this is what has to happen because God told me when I was pregnant, V'ravya avot sa'ir. God said that the younger one is going to be greater. You are the younger one. That's why I favored you all these years, Yaakov. Daddy favors Esav for whatever reasons.
He
puts food on the table. Kitzayi b'fiv. He's a big prankster and he's a fraudster. And he got Yitzchak, who believes what anyone says, being the son of Yaakov. But Rivka is from Padan Aram. She's the sister of Laban. She's the daughter of Bethuel. In her whole life, she knows when someone's a trickster. She sees through people much better than Yitzchak does, right? But one time, I said the Musar moment on a Friday night. I said that the real problem of a habitual liar is not that nobody believes him. No, he's good at lying.
He sometimes says the truth.
He doesn't believe anybody else.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he's so busy lying, he thinks everyone else does.
Right, that's true.
So anyway, right. And that's what they have to out-con them. Now Rivka is telling Yaakov to con... What is it? Con man means confidence man, convince man. He's trying to raise your confidence in me that I'm something that I'm not by wearing the, you know, by smelling like Esav, by maybe tasting like Esav, but maybe I don't have to look like Esav because I'm trying to trick a man who's blind, but I'm trying to. He doesn't sound like Esav, but like we said before, but. But that means that even if we have to wear Big Day Esav, we always must have Kol Yaakov. It's a shame that in our history, we sometimes have to wear Big Day Esav. That's part of our history. It's Eva Bereshis, so it's part of our blueprint of our destiny, like Ramban says. So let's get back to our point here, is that Esav is a man for the moment. He says, Haliteni na. I know it's red. That's my color. I know it's raw. Haliteni na. So he does know the word na.
But in a different
connotation, so Rashi can stand as he stands back. You know, okay? Alright, so he says, pour it down my throat, this red stuff. Ki oyev anochi. He doesn't say ki ro'ev anochi. He says, again, he says, ki oyev anochi. In other words, why does he have to say, because I'm tired? Because I want to go right to sleep.
Also, sometimes if you're low blood sugar, you can be really tired too.
Okay, good. That's a good point. Really. Good point.
Good
point. It drains you, and I said, and I want to go right to sleep, so I'm not going to wait till it's cooked. It's going to take another hour and 45 minutes, and I don't want to wait that long. I want to eat it now and go to sleep. Okay? And that fortifies our opinion of Esav that he is a man for the moment. Right? Remember, he marries the daughter of a man who was banished from the Avram's home because he was a mitzachik. Mitzachik, meaning he's playing now. His brother is Yitzchok. Yitzchok means for a later time. But Tishchak liyom acharon. Like the Yesh Yishchayel. Ozimol Yitzchok pinu. The religious person is constantly pushing off the gratification. It's really a major
sense of responsibility.
Yes, it's a major sense of spirituality is not dafka not to live for the moment, but to live for an expected moment. I'm putting off this gratification for the moment. This is what Shabbos is all about. I'm putting off this great thing on Tuesday because no, I'm just going to save it for Shabbos. We pass in that way, like Shammai. They said, I'm putting off this pleasure of this food, you know, because I have to make sure that it's that a lot of things before you get to eat, right? Mm-hmm. Is it kosher? Is it shechted properly? Am I fleishiks? Am I, you know, I mean, do I have the proper bracha? You don't just do things on impulse at the moment. We're our religious milieu prevents us from acting on impulse. I mean, you know, if you're keeping the laws of Yichud, right, you can never get into any of the problems that we're reading about in the papers today, right? and if you have respect for the body of another person, it's not which the halacha requires of us, you know, then it's never going to get to that.
Inquire, be out of business really fast.
Okay, so Yaakov season. Okay. So Yaakov sees an opportunity here. Vayomer Yaakov. And by saying this, we see that competitive spirit. Yaakov was looking for this. He was looking for this moment. Now, before we read Pasuk Lamed Aleph, I'd like you to please stay on this page. Alright? No, you have to turn to the page before, forgive me. I was right. It's just stay on the same page we started, page 126. Medrash has this on a different pasuk, but Rashi has it here. It's on pasuk Chavov, right? He writes Shomati Medrash Agada Hador Shol Lefi Pshuta. Pasuk Chav Hey, Chavov. Pasuk Chavov. Vacherichen Yotzochiv. He writes Shomati Medrash Agada. I heard a medrash Hador Shol Lefi Pshuta that explains this Lefi Pshuto. Now, what does Rashi think Pshat is, if we're about to read? But the Pshat is, the question is not, why was Yaakov born holding on to his brother's heel? To sharpen that question. Sharpen the question. Why does the Torah tell me this insignificant fact? Mm-hmm. Twins are always born, you know, wrapped around each other or something, or right? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying is that it seems to be such an insignificant fact.
No, but it's who really is the older
right,
one.
Not right.
You put two things in a jar and then you want them to come
it's
out.
Rashi, right. That's
then
the Rashi.
One that went in first comes out last.
That's what we're going to read right now. There's no way to prove or disprove what Reverend just said. But the medical experts will tell you, but no way to prove it either. But they approach this with a degree of.
Do we know if they were identical or fraternal twins?
They're obviously fraternal.
Yeah,
from
they're fraternal because one
he's
is filled
red,
with red hair.
And Harry, he's red and hairy, and the other one is.
But to be born holding on to the brother's heel, it may have had to be in the same
sack.
Hey, wait,
you're getting ahead of me.
You know, but be it as it may, I just want to say that for this to be even recorded in the Torah, and then for this to be the reason for naming this person, it must mean that there's something here. That's why Rashi says
that people
should
go. Well, that was the fight inside.
Right, so, correct. That was before. That shows, because God said, Ul'om mil'om ye'emotz. These two will always be competing. Ul'om mil'om ye'emotz. So for some reason, Jewish thought has said that Esav became Christianity. That's historically and genealogically incorrect. The Idumeans, the remnant of Edom, no longer exists. But somehow Rome, Edom became Rome, Uz became Constantinople, Edomite cities, or I'm not going to get into that. That requires a course, how that became. But the Idumeans, historically, before in the middle of the first century BCE, well before the Roman height, Idumeans no longer were identifiably genealogically traceable. Okay, they the amazing thing is, the remnant of them converted to Judaism.
They weren't identifiable.
So they're mixed in with the Jews. No, they're not. They're not. Right,
meaning the last time you could identify them, after that,
maybe someone felt that it was with those great grandchildren of those converted Idumeans who became the early Christians. Maybe that's what they're saying. Right? Herod, you've heard of Herod?
Mm-hmm.
Was the son of one of those converted Idumeans. Be it as it may, I'm just going to say that Ulo Me'amot, but Hashem said, Shnei Goyim Bivitneich, Ushnei Le'umim Mime'ayich Yiparedu, as if though to say, the minute they part from you, they're moving away from parallel lines. They're not moving towards each other, they're moving away, slowly, maybe slowly, but they're moving away. Maybe in Vayishlach they're coming a little back, a little like this, but they never, you see, when you're moving away and then you move parallel, you're never coming together. But if you're moving away and they're moving this way, maybe, but no, they're never, at best they're moving parallel, right? So I'm just using this as a simon, but that ul'om mime'ayich yiparedu, and only Rivka understood this. Yitzchak says, no, I'm not going to raise them this way. I want these two brothers to get along. I want Esav and Yaakov to be like Yisachar and Zvulun. I want to give them both a bracha. I'm not blind to who's what here and who's better and who's. I'm going to give Yaakov Berchas Avraham and I'm going to give Yaakov the land of Israel. I don't want to alienate Esav. Esav deserves Tal Shemayim and Shemane Aretz and Rav Dagon V'Sirosh, and he deserves Yaakov to bow down to him. And Yaakov will gladly, while he's being taken care of by his loving brother Esav. And Rivka says, "You're being naive." This is assuming that she told him Varavya Avot Sa'ir. I mean, they spoke on occasion about what the nature of the two boys were, right? Of Sarvei Dilun Arim, and now let's see what they're
it's
like.
It's also the perspective that each of them is coming from. Like, Rivka sees the trickery because she grew up in trickery. Yitzchak must have felt that Avraham always was unhappy that Hashem said, listen to Sarah and send away one
Absolutely.
Of my sons. Like 50% success rate in raising children isn't very satisfying.
And I'm not happy. wait a second. Avraham sent out much more than 50%.
Okay, but the Torah
all of Keturah's children he also sent away. But it didn't mean that he just said that this great nation that God promised me shall manifest itself not in all my children. That might be painful, like you're saying.
It's
it only manifests itself in one of Be Yitzchak Yikorela Chazera. Now, it'll be up to Yitzchak to decide how much of his Zera will follow in his path.
He doesn't want that. He wants 100%.
But Yitzchak wants 100% here. I think that I can...
He thinks he can play to each of the personalities
but Rivka, Rivka knows together. Better. I'm not going to second guess her, but she sets in motion. She says, it was Mime'ayich Yiparedu. I'm sorry, it's naive to think that these two can work together. They will not. And Esav will have a better way of convincing Yaakov to be more like him than vice versa. as is usually the case in history. So the issue is that back to our pasuk of Yaakov sees it as an opportunity, which is that the thing I have sought from my first moment on earth, holding back his heel, right? Mm-hmm. I see an opportunity now. Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay.
Now, to Yaakov, what is it that he's purchasing here? The Bechora. What is the Bechora mean to Yaakov at this point? So I want to read what the Rebbetzin referred to before, this thing. He says, Bedin Chafav, you see it? Bedin haya ochez bo la'akvo. Bedin. Yaakov was holding back his heel al pi din. Now, din means
justice.
Justified. It's justice for him to do this, which is what? Yaakov notzar mitipa rishona ve'esav min hashniya. Yaakov was created from tipa rishona. I'm sorry, Rashi. This does not fit science. The twins are created from the same tipa. Right? The same
fraternal?
No, but it's the same tipa. It's just that the egg breaks off into two. Right? So fertilized by the same zera. Right? So, but we know what Rashi means. Is that Rashi's being just almost like a that a five-year-old can understand. And he writes, just try this at home. He says, Say ulamad mishfoferes shapir k'tzara, take a thin tube, put in two marbles that are just fit in the tube itself, put in the two marbles, and then turn it upside down to give birth, and the one that was conceived first is coming out second. So I ask Rashi, is that even the halacha? So, because Rashi says bedin means, that doesn't necessarily mean normative halacha. Bedin means there is justification. I know what Rashi's doing.
He's justifying the behavior,
behavior. At this time, Jews were accused. Whenever a Jew is accused of immoral behavior, the Christians used to say, you're behaving just like Yaakov. See, you take advantage of people who are thirsty and hungry and tired, and that's what you're doing.
People said that?
Absolutely. There are on record statements and disputations, of course.
Wow.
It's interesting that Christians identified with Esav in these proceedings. Mm-hmm. You know, they identify with Haman. They identify. Yeah, look at the Bilam, Haman, Esav. They're all over the Sistine Chapel. They're represented as people who were abused and wronged by the Jews and had you know. Christians love Bilam.
Because
Bilam predicts the star that's going to Kochav Miyakov. That's going to. Anyway, so this is the din, so to say, right? If you will, since we were just discussing this one case, can you buy a birthright? And the answer is, if a birthright is nothing but when daddy divides his $3 million between his two sons, I, the younger one, am going to get $2 million, that is something that can be bought, yes. A ksuva can be sold. Now, a ksuva is a piece of paper that says that if my husband divorces me or dies, I'm getting this. Now, our ksuvas today are very powerful, especially the Ashkenazim. The Sephardic ksuvas put in all the information. Yeah, he's going to give me 1,500,000 shekel, and he's going to give me the 400 goats, and he's going to give me 200 camels, and he's going to give me the house. And him, right? So remember, I actually did a wedding the bride's father was from Afghanistan.
They haggle.
And I was told in advance that they would haggle.
The first brother-in-law warned him where to start so that you could avoid the delay for the haggling.
Wow. Don't start in the fair.
Well, we have an Ashkenazi ksuba, because it says in the ksuba, the chassan does X, v'hosif lo min delay od. So in our ksuba, this is od, mei zekuk and kesef. But for that bride, we said, alpayim zekuk and kesef. Her ksuba was 220 times the average ksuba. Because I avoided the bargaining, because the father of the groom knew this also, and he said, "What are you willing to give my daughter?" So usually, you know, in Afghanistan, the groom's family starts low, and the bride's family goes high, and then they find, you know, come somewhere in the middle. So we sort of got the word ahead of time, so it wouldn't be a circus. What the bride's family would be happy with. He started off with that. And he goes, "Yeah, fine." So I wrote, "Alpayim zgub kesef tzara v'chen, sachakol alpayim b'meiv zgub kesef." So anyway. So ksuva is what's in the ksuva is also a theoretical. It's not a tangible thing, although it is a tangible piece of paper. But those things can be sold. In the Gemara's time, of course, now we don't know anything like this today, but in the Gemara's time, let's say the woman's ksuva was worth $100,000, she would sell it to someone for $70,000.
And then what?
Raise money. So a ksuva is only worth something if...
someone's willing to pay for it?
No. If it's actionable. It's actionable if there's a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Or if the woman outlives the man.
Okay. So she sells it, but she's still married.
Which is much more common.
She sells it.
She gets the cash up front.
But she's still married.
So now, you see, but here's the thing. It depends how much the ksuba is worth. It depends how healthy she is, how healthy the husband is. Because if the husband outlives the wife, ksuba is not worth a penny.
Right, that's true.
Man doesn't pay out a ksuba for somebody he's not married to. If he divorces her, he has to pay out the ksuba. Right, you get it? So the ksuba is worth $100,000. So the man gives her $70,000. This is not even ribis. It's not interest. If the husband outlives the wife, this man made a $70,000 investment for nothing. He's not getting anything. But if the wife outlives the husband, or he divorces her, right, then the man gets a $100,000 payment. Right? So the halacha only allows a ksuba to be downgraded this way in a very public forum because this is given to abuse. You follow what I'm saying? She can tell a man, "Listen, my husband's divorcing me soon."
She can tell some more than one person.
Get it. No, but she's not going to tell this to the man. Yeah, she could do like a producer's kind of thing and do it with a bunch of people.
Right?
But no, she's not going to tell this to this guy because she's trying to defraud this guy. Give me $30,000 for a $100,000 ksuva. I'm in great shape. My husband is dying soon. Right? So, so she's going to get a lot of money for this. But, anyway.
Can the second guy sell it again for $70,000.
Now we know what? New information. We saw them fighting like cats and dogs. He's probably going to divorce her soon. And then now they made up. Now the ksuba is with. So the ksuba goes up and down depending on circumstance. How healthy he is. How healthy she is. All right. So the Gemara talks about this. I'm just saying there are all kinds of things. You could buy air rights in the Gemara and Baba Basra. So these are things that 2,000 years ago our sages were talking about.
Are there any concepts of prenups?
Yes.
He could also try to sabotage the relationship so he can get it.
It's called Kiddushin al Tanai, but there's a moratorium on this kind of thing today. We don't do Kiddushin al Tanai today. This is what I'd like to do with you, is turn to page 1046. 1046. I'm going to use names that you will recognize from last week's parsha, not by Yishlach, but by Yetzeh. And the names will be Yaakov is the man, 1046. 1046. The Yaakov is the man. The two wives are Rachel and Leah. Kitzien li'ish tei noshim. Man has two wives. Ha'achas ahuva. That would be Rachel. V'ha'achas snua.
Leah.
Okay. From these four words, it's not clear who he married first. But, in other words, in the Torah, Yaakov married the snua first.
Mm-hmm.
He thought it was the Ahuva, but he got the Snua, right? Why do we say that Yaakov hated Leah? She keeps saying that herself. She named Reuven because now God will see that I'm a hated wife. She named Shimon, now God will hear that I'm a hated wife. Levi, oh, now my husband must accompany me. Why? Why would Yaakov have to accompany her now that
he only has two hands?
Because he only has two hands. So now you know, there's only a double stroller. Now Yaakov will have to go shopping with me and have to take me wherever we go. All right. So that's what you see, that Leah herself is called the Snua. Right? So the Medrash says that when he woke up in the morning and saw that it wasn't Rachel, he wanted to divorce her that day. I never contracted to marry you, and I don't want to be married to you, he told her. So she said, fair enough, but I may be carrying your child. If I am, then don't make me raise your child alone. We'll stay married. And he agreed. Okay? Fine. That Reuven was indeed conceived that night. As I mentioned yesterday in Shul, yesterday was Reuven's birthday.
Yes.
So if it was a full-term baby, the wedding was on Purim. Yidal Adar. Right? So, because the Gemara says that because Rachel was silent, she was zochah to have Shaul, who was silent, and he was told he was king. And because of that, he was zochah to have Rachel, Esther, who was silent until it was worthy to inform Achashverosh of her background. So you see, the whole Purim story starts out from Rachel and Leah's marriage. So it says Yaakov looked at him and said, how could you do that? Okay, I'll agree. If you're carrying my baby, then I'll stay with you. But how could you do this to your sister? Forget about what they're tricking me. How could you do this to your sister? And she said, Anu, when you didn't do this to your brother? I was crying all those years because everyone said the older gets the older, so I have to marry Esav, and the younger gets the younger, Rachel gets you. So you see that her eyebrows Nishru be. Anyway, So the minute you said Anochi Esav Bechorecha, the irony of the reader certainly, you know, to conflate this into Leah telling him this, you know, that as soon as he said Anochi Esav Bechorecha, I am Esav. Okay, I'm supposed to marry Esav.
So you
are.
Took that position. Now you're the
Bechor. You said you were the Bechor. So Anochi Esav Bechorecha. So then you're destined to marry me. Now let's see if you can also marry Rachel. But you created the destiny, not me. And Lavan seems to know this too, because during that day when he confronts Lavan at the first Sheva Bracha, he says, how could you do this to me? Lama Rimi Sani. He goes, Lama Rimi Sani. Ba'ochicha v'mirma. Lo yasekin bimkomenu. Or say, satsi iru lifnehem b'chira. But you have to add that word bimkomenu. In our place, we don't have a custom in Aram to put the younger one before the older one, like I heard in Israel. Right? So when she started, she was very snarky of her to talk that way. So he stayed with her, but okay. So he has these two wives, Achas Ahuva and Achas Nua. Right? Got it? V'yoldu lo vanim. Now, why do you have to repeat the next two words? Who else but these two women are giving birth to children? Get it?
Okay.
Do you see the verbosity of those next two words? V'yoldu lo vanim. You could say, see, he had two wives, Achas Ahuva and Achas Nua. V'yoldu lo vanim. What do you have to repeat? Ha'ahuva and Achas Nua. Plus, it comes, the repetition.
And then it says, Achas Nua again.
But the repetition begs its own question, because it says, V'haya ha'bein ha'bechor la'snia. The older one is the child of Leah.
But it mentioned
right?
The Ahuva first.
So why did you say the old Lovanim Ahuva Vasnua, implying that the one giving birth first is
the loved one?
Yahuva.
Right. Well, this is not true. Right.
The rest of the pasuk just contradicts that in itself. You get it?
Yeah.
So now, but without looking in the Chumash, what's the law that's coming up?
Who gets the double portion?
Who's supposed to get the double portion?
The one born
first, no matter who's child.
So based on the end of Pasuk Tezvav, who is that?
Seemingly.
Yeah?
Reuven.
Let's call Reuven the child of the Snua and Yosef the child of the Ahuva, right?
Yeah.
Okay? So when it says, Ha'yah ben ha-bechor la-snia, the Bechor is Reuven. So what should be the next pasuk say? When it comes time for him to write out his will, what should he do?
Give Reuven the double portion.
Double portion should go to Reuven, right? Instead, look what the Torah does. V'hayobah minchalo espanav eiseh sher liyelo. When he calls in the lawyers to write up his will, or probably more likely at that time, I don't know if they wrote wills, but when it comes time that you're sitting on your deathbed and you call your family around and tell them what you want to have happen, this is what has to happen. Lo yuchal levaker espeno havol pnei ben hasnu habachor. You see something unusual. It says, you may not give your double portion to Yosef. You must give your double portion to Reuven. Ki esabachor ben hasnua yakir. You must favor the child of Leah. Lo ses lo pishnayim. He gets the double portion. B'chol asher you must say lo from whatever you have. The Gemara in Bava Basra learns all kinds of diukim from these things. Ki hu reishis ono. Lo mishpata b'chora. He is the first of your strength. The mishpata b'chora goes to him.
So it's assuming that he really wants to give it to Yosef.
Yes, he certainly does want to give it. That's why the Torah has to tell him what not to do before it tells him what to do. But it's very strange that the Torah says, no, you may not. Of course you can't. Because the Torah should just say, you have Reuven, you have Yosef, give your double portion to Reuven. But you have to say, don't give it to Yosef. Make sure to give it to Reuven. And it seems very verbose to explain to me why. Ki hu reishis ono, lo mishpata b'chora, es habachor yakir, v'nem v'ponim v'nesnuet. It's too much, telling me too much.
Because he switched, because he knows it could be switched.
Because he knows, how was it switched? So this is what appears in the parish of the Vilna Gaon. Because first he asks, why would someone stay married to someone he hates? It's a pasuk in Malachi, ki sanei shalach. Mm-hmm. If you hate someone, let her be free and to marry someone who will love her more. Right? Mm-hmm. Which she probably wants. Right?
But maybe in those times it wasn't
in the ancient world, a woman couldn't be married to two different men in her lifetime. Mm-hmm. Most places. If her husband died, they'd kill her too, and if he divorced her, she's finished. Yes, I'm sorry, I know, I'm sorry to tell you this, but the Torah was way ahead of its time to allow a woman to be married to two or more men. In her lifetime, all right. I'm just saying what was that? What was out there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a separate law in the same parsha that if he divorces her and she marries another man, the only restriction on her is she can't go back to the original husband, but she can go back. You know, she can go on. You know,
that's
right.
Contrast to okay. Ancient law.
Where divorced her, forget it. She's finished.
It's like the Catholic Church.
Right. Yes. Catholic Church doesn't even allow the divorce in the first place.
Right.
Okay. All right. So, which is maybe even more cruel in some cases.
Yeah,
it isn't under certain circumstances, but you still can't remarry.
It's a null.
Yeah, well, that's
yeah, they can annul.
Okay,
still can't really. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so here is how the Vilna Gaon creates this situation. Man, let's use the same names. Yaakov marries Rachel, right? And he loves her. He exercises what was permitted at this time in history. And he marries Leah as well. Right? And he sees that he... Let's put it this way. He marries Leah first. Like in the Torah. Let's stay with Vayetzer. He marries Leah. He's married to her for 2 weeks and there's an irreconcilable difference. He divorces her. Okay? She's the snua. He's not even married to her anymore. So that answers the question. Kisonei shalach. He's not married to her. Right? So why is he calling? He has two wives. Well, she was his wife, but you'll see in a minute. Then he marries Rachel the next day. A man does not have to wait after a divorce to remarry. A woman has to wait 3 months. So he marries Rachel the next day. Right? And some months hence, both of these women are carrying a baby. Right? Now, Leah conceived first, because he wasn't even married to Rachel when Leah conceived. Right, but Rachel carries for a short amount of time. She carries for 7 months, and Leah carries for 9 months. So Taka, look at the first pasuk. Who gives birth first? Lovanim ha'ahuva v'hasnua. So this man says, "Hey, Yosef is older. Yosef is a month and a half older than Reuven. He's born first. But which marble was put in first?
The other marble,
right?" So the Torah says, "Ki hu reishis ono." Remember in Vayichi when Yaakov says on his deathbed, "Reuven reishis oni," right? You ever see what Rashi says on that? No. Utipa Rishona Shalosh. Reuven was conceived. Reish Hasoni means the first one that I conceived. Not just the first one born, the first one I conceived. So
the Bechor isn't really transferred. It's
so let's see. What's he saying here? Is this the halacha even?
But isn't this not what happened? Is this just postulating it?
Well, I don't know if you were here when we read this Rashi in the beginning, that Rashi said if you put in a tube.
No, I got that. But I'm saying, but there were 7 years in between.
No, Rachel and Leah were married a week apart.
Didn't he have to work another 7 years?
Well, they got married right away, and then he had to fulfill his contract.
That completely changes.
No, but Rachel, by the way, didn't have Yosef till many years later. I mean,
she was Akara, though, for
Akara during that time. I'm just using these names.
Which child was born first?
Reusing these names for theory. By the way, Yosef did get the Bechorah. It was transferable. What's the Bechorah? You got two tribes.
Oh, he got a double portion.
Levi is not a tribe. One falls out, and Yosef does get a double portion. Huh. If you have the whole Tanakh, in Dibrei Yamim, it says, these are the sons of Yaakov, Reuven, and it says, but Reuven did not receive the Bechorah. That went to Yosef. Because he was Mavalda, he moved around.
So we learned from the original story.
Does it seem like the Kurdish Oracle is micromanaging the world?
Oh, well, of course he is. Leaf doesn't fall from a tree without some kind of management. But
what happens to free will?
So we still have the free will to do what is.
But we have halachot. So we have to figure out what
is part of our destiny. So we see from here that with this interpretation that goes according to Rashi. But the problem is when Rashi says bedin haya oches Yaakov bedin holding get back, I'm supposed to come out first. The irony is that voracious, the younger one prevails.
Mm.
So stay younger, Yaakov. Stay younger. It's going to be okay. And Yaakov himself, not just by favoring Yosef. What is the ultimate point of this realization in Sefer Bereishis, which Yosef himself is not happy with? What am I talking about? And this really saves Sefer Bereishis.
Switching
of the hands at the end of Bereishis. So that right after that, I can have two brothers who are one is living amongst the people, his back is scarred like everybody else, and he's working with them. He's 83 when everything happens. And this guy who's grows up in the palace, never worked a day of his life, escapes for 60 years, the first sign of anything, any danger for him, and all of a sudden he's coming back and taking over the show. Right? If Aaron behaves like all other first older brothers in Bereishis, that's what he's gonna say. But no. Moshe was so apprehensive when he heard that Aaron is coming and he is happy for you. What does Hashem have to tell Moshe? He's happy for you. Who cares? Just do the job. You don't have to worry about whether your brother's happy with your job. No, because it shows that Moshe's apprehension at the burning bush is because, God, why should I be doing all these things? Shlach Nabi Atishlach, he met my brother. He's the guy. I knew when I left. It's a beautiful story that when it says that Paro's daughter picked up the basket and there was a na'ar boche. Rabbi Lechosid says, such a chiddush. It wasn't Moshe, he's a baby, he's not a Na'ar. The Na'ar Boche was Aaron, whose younger brother was taken away. Right? So it's a beautiful relationship. The relationship between Moshe and Aaron is so beautiful in the Torah. The way they work together, and that's why they were often found together with singular verbs. V'yavo Moshe Aaron, v'yushav Moshe Aaron. I'm not saying that's not limited to Moshe and Aaron, but it's a lot with them, the two of them. They're acting as a team, and Moshe gave up from himself so that Aaron can have a bigger stage. It's really quite beautiful the way they interact in Parsha Shmini. Even is really quite extraordinary, and this really saves the Torah, because how can a nation succeed as a B'nai Yisrael when the family seems to be infighting. So Menachem and Ephraim save this, because Yosef expresses displeasure over the way he automatically chooses a Manasseh, Ephraim over Manasseh. But Ephraim and Manasseh, Manasseh apparently was okay with this. Right? Okay, so that's it. The answer is a Bechorah can be sold. The halacha, however, is when Rashi says Bedin, he means in the minds of the readers of the text of Bereishis. Because the din is not that way. The din is that the Bechor is the one born first. The Vilna Gaon is explaining these psukim in Kisetse to help us along with our justification of what Yaakov did. Of Rivka saying, listen, this is what you need to do because this is my understanding. I admit it, I disagree with my husband over this. Your father thinks otherwise, but this is what you got to do. So why didn't I answer the question I raised in the very beginning? Why didn't Yitzchak go back on the whole thing?
Because it was still valid.
Because Esav said, now I know why his name is Yaakov. I think we said this last week. He said, what do you mean? What did we do twice? This is the second time he did this to you? Yeah, when we were younger. He took my Bechorah. So Yitzchak says, what? What do you mean? You never told me that. You should have told me that when I asked you to go hunt meat for me. Because if you had told me that, I said, it's not yours. You sold it. Right? The Bechor Shor, perhaps answering for these Christian claims that I mentioned earlier in the Middle Ages, the Bechor Shor says, Esav is the one acting immorally in our story. He should have told his father that he purchased this, that Yaakov purchased this from him. Right? So the answer is, the halacha is that a Bechor can be sold, but we do determine the Bechor from birth, not from conception. Din doesn't mean in Shulchan Aruch, but din means in the minds of and the ideas of the reader. How do I know? It went to Yosef. Yosef was Rochel's Bechor, but not Yaakov's Bechor. Okay. All right.